Hi, I'm Christina Crowley-Arkley. I'm a Canadian dairy farmer's daughter, strategic marketing and communications entrepreneur, and your host for Country Guides podcast series. With renewed focus on your farm, your conversation, I sat down with farmers across Canada to talk about their stories of success and failure, what keeps them going every day, and how they're positioning themselves and their farm for generations to come. All right, let's get into it. Well, thanks so much, Graham, for joining us here for the Country Guide podcast episode. I'm sure we're going to have lots to talk about.
Pleased to be here.
Give me a little bit of an overview, I guess, of what you do, because you're wearing a great shirt that has Sweet Ontario on it, which I know that's a maple syrup brand for our province of Ontario, but you're also a cash cropper too. So give us a little bit of an overview of what goes on in the daily farm.
I was born and raised on a farm. That's all I know how to do. And we branched out on our own, and my son has come on board just lately, and we own three farms, and we cash crop. We also do work for others. I do spraying, planting, a little bit of tillage, and combining for other farmers in the area.
Yeah. And so whereabouts do you farm?
We're in the Bloomingdale, Breslau, Maryhill area.
Okay, yeah. A close drive to Canada's Outdoor Farm Show.
Yeah, it's only about a half hour drive from home.
Yeah, which is amazing. So how many acres do you guys cash crop yourselves?
We're up to about 750 altogether.
Yeah.
And then the custom work, another 1,500 on top of that.
Yeah, well, so you guys are busy with your endeavors with farming. And then, of course, I mentioned about the Sweet Ontario shirt you're repping as well. So obviously, yeah, do maple syrup.
That keeps us going through the winter and spring. Some people are out working on their equipment, and we're out boiling maple syrup. We do about 8,000 taps, and we produce over 10,000 liters of syrup every year.
Amazing. So again, to put in perspective, because a lot of our listeners, because Canada, not everywhere we can grow maple syrup trees, only, you know, predominantly in Quebec and Ontario. What's the average size of a maple syrup farm?
I guess the average to make it feasible would be about 2,500 taps.
Okay.
That gets you a reverse osmosis machine to put it to work.
Yeah.
And I mean, any size bigger, you just get bigger equipment.
Yeah.
And just this year, we've expanded, and we're going to be closer to 10,000 taps.
No way, good for you
got
guys.
A bigger RO machine, and the evaporator we still think can handle it. But it's not a single person operation. The more hands on deck, the better. Like, you got to walk the bushes, listen for leaks, and find the leaks. And
you have to just tap the trees every spring. Like, that's a whole production on its own.
That's hard work, especially if we get 2 feet of snow or more.
Yeah, yeah.
When there's less than a foot of snow, it's actually pretty nice. But it's still, the older you get, the faster you wear out.
I bet. And so it's funny that, I mean, I laugh when farmers say, you know, that you do something else to keep you busy throughout the winter when, as a cash cropper and the amount of custom work you guys do, you know, you probably should be enjoying maybe some Florida sun or some time on the couch type thing. Yeah. But you want to be busy because it sounds like that's just what you're used to.
See, we have to make wood to burn. To cook the sap, and I also I'm in charge of one of the snowmobile trail groomers.
No way.
So I groom snowmobile trails, and there's never a dull moment. Just as busy in the winter as I am in the summer, pretty much. Only I'm usually done by 7 o'clock at night.
Yeah, okay. That's success to you. Why do you think, I mean, Graham, you mentioned how you were raised on a farm, so you don't know any other way. Do you think that's what you, I mean, this way of life that you clearly have lived for yourself, for your family now, you mentioned your son's back home on the farm, is that what keeps you farming?
I think so. It's and you hit it right on the head when you said it's a way of life, because that's what it is. It's not a job. It's a life. It's your own way of living.
Yeah.
And I did work in a garage when I was in high school for part of a program. And I didn't like it.
The 9 to 5 or the corporate world just wasn't for you?
Yeah, I worked on cars and everything. I learned a lot.
Yeah.
But getting back out in the open air was the only way to do it. I like working on the tractors when something goes wrong. That experience had helped me with that.
Yeah. Take us back to that, let's say, 18-year-old or 17-year-old in high school working in the garage. Probably seemed maybe cool when you started. And I feel like I've heard that story from a lot of other farmers that left the farm, went out to try their own thing, and then came back. What was the moment that you realized that you wanted to get back to the farm? Did you have a conversation with your parents? Like, take us through that moment.
Well, I had an older brother that was at home at that time already. And then I worked in the garage, and I knew that was just my easy way out of school, because it was a program where I'd work 2 weeks, go to school 2 weeks. I was just trying to get out of school.
It was an excuse. Okay. Yeah.
Yeah. And all through my school years, I was in the tractors at an early age and grew up with tractors working in fields. The work was there, so
yeah.
It was great. And I knew all along that this was what I liked doing. And the tractors just got bigger and better. And they still
are. A little
more
attractive. Yeah, yeah.
They still are.
A little more money now.
Yeah, now I got to pay for them. Or back then, I didn't have to.
So, of course, you could pick the great one then tell dad, hey, pay for it, right?
Well, I got a model of the first tractor that I was in day and night plowing with, like, because that was my job at the start.
Yeah.
And it's still one of the best tractors we ever had.
Huh. And so how many acres were you farming then as a family compared to what you're doing now?
I would say 1,200 back then, the whole family. And then I have two brothers. When we all branched out, I got one brother I work with.
Yeah.
And we still work together. We're still at that roughly 1,200 acres between the two of us.
Yeah.
And, you know, we're busy.
Yeah,
There's no dull moments. But when we work together, it's a lot nicer work environment than on your own having to do everything type of thing.
Yeah. I mean, was there a time where someone gave you a piece of advice when you were kind of getting started on your own, or, you know, you just had your brothers branched out where, you know, you knew you wanted to grow, you wanted to do other things. It sounds like you took on the maple syrup, you got your son now. Is there any advice that someone gave you that you look back now and you think, man, that was a key piece of advice that I stuck to? Or on the opposite, maybe someone gave you a piece of advice, you're like, thank God I didn't listen to them.
Yeah, no, it's my father was a really good mentor and boss, and he was a wealth of knowledge that he taught us, and I appreciate him, still do. He's still around.
Is he still around? Yeah, wow, it's amazing.
89 years old and still driving tractor, and good I hope I can do that too.
Yeah, yeah.
But yeah, he had a wealth of knowledge, and there was a time when I just said, nope, I've had enough, I'm not going to do it, and he just sort of talked to me calmly, which was surprising. And he said, you know, if you want to stick around, it'll pay, but if you don't want to, that's fine. He says, I got lots of work for you, and in the long run it'll pay off. And I trusted him.
Yeah.
And I stayed there and worked, and it was only about 10 years ago when that finally everything came falling on my lap, so to speak. But no, we work for it.
Yeah. So. Yeah. And so what do you think now that your son's working back home with you? What type of advice do you think you gave him that made him think, you know what, I want to follow in dad's footsteps here?
Yeah, you know, like there's they come out with a lot of bright ideas, and you know what, I think I did too back then, of different ways of doing things that are going to make everything better, and technology is the biggest thing right now.
Yeah.
And I learned, and you know, there's probably just as many times when I say it's not going to work, and there's just as many times I say, you know, that just might work, and it usually does.
Yeah, yeah.
In colors. And that's been the big thing. It's nice to have him on board with the technology and the things that I can still have the old school way of things, and together they work pretty good.
Yeah. So I was going to say, as you said that, I mean, I think the word being naive would be probably what people would say when young people come out of school and they're so excited, but yet they don't have the experience that someone like yourself would say, this is what worked, what didn't. But the difference, as you're saying, technology is playing a huge role now, because there's things that you wouldn't, you know of. Some would even know. And how do you manage all that technology on the phone?
Well, it's the word I got to stay away from is being blockheaded.
Okay,
Because that's an easy thing that I could have fallen into. But I'm open and I listen because of the experience I've had and some of the other things I've been involved in. But, you know, he does have good ideas. And if you got to make the most of every moment to succeed.
Yeah.
So you can't turn your back on things. And he may come up with something, and I just know that you go to these chemical meetings or seed meetings that there's people there with the same thought process. And it's like, okay, if I can get him to stay in charge, it's not like I have to learn how to do everything.
Yeah.
I just have to be aware and work with him on it. I don't have to take over the computer. I'm okay to the degree on the computer, but I don't want to learn more. Really.
Yeah, yeah. So you bring up a really good point, Graham, about being that you didn't want to be a blockheaded, which I appreciate. Yeah. So how have you told yourself to stay open and curious to all these things that, I mean, I use the word disruption. Like, you want to talk about time of change and disruption for agriculture and food. I think it's a really cool word, because I'm like, this is amazing, all this technology.
Yeah.
Some people could be very scared and say, I don't want to learn, I don't want to change. How did you have that conversation with yourself?
I actually listened to my wife. My wife is very one set way, and not really willing to go new chapters. It's what this works, why change? And it's like, no, you got to change, because bigger and better things are coming along. And it's just like when we get tractors, every time you get a new tractor, it's a major change.
Yeah.
So your whole life has got to follow around that. It's everything is going that way. And I've been in it long enough to see the advantages of it.
Yeah.
Like auto steer. I went through the dilemma when that first came out. No, I'm not touching it. And once I learned how easy it is, boy, you know,
yeah, that's makes it
I can
easy
go
now.
On my phone and catch up on my emails while I'm going up and down the field. It's great.
Yeah, yeah. As I was gonna say, do you have a Twitter account? Are you on Twitter or now for X, formerly known as Twitter? But do you have a Twitter account so you can
you know what?
And keep up with
I just made a determined decision that no, I'm not going to get into some of them things just because that consumes too much of my time. Okay. I still got to focus on the farming.
Still got to make sure the tractor's
but I'm very well aware of it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. As I say, I mean, I appreciate what you're saying in terms of like of any sector. I laugh that when a farmer says, "Oh, I don't like change," it's like our whole sector is based around change. When it was only a few short decades ago that we were driving horses and plows in a field, and now we have auto steer and all these incredible tractors.
Oh yeah. Like I look at my dad. He did go plow fields with a horse and plow.
Yeah.
The technology changes he's been through in his lifetime to now auto steer, all the computerized stuff in the tractors and that. Like, I'd just love to live a life like that. Don't you? But you know, the biggest benefit we have as farmers, the biggest technology that we got is a cell phone. When I was young and we were on tractors, if you got stuck, you had to walk to a neighbor's house to get a phone call to get somebody to come. And then they had to go out and find my dad or somebody.
Yeah.
Or now, I mean, within a second, you can get a hold of somebody. And within minutes, there's somebody there to help you.
Yeah.
It's just amazing.
Yeah, talk about efficiency, eh?
Yeah.
You wasted like half a day maybe getting the tractor stuck and having to go find help. Whereas now you can be in and out in a few minutes.
But my dad's gone through all kinds of technology changes like that. And it's like, wow, that's something.
How do you think that's changed the person in agriculture and food? I mean, I think the farmer, I mean, you said it about how our technology is changing so much. Do you think the farmer, him or herself, is changing to keep up the times?
Well, you know what? There is a disadvantage to technology. You don't have to communicate as much from person to person.
Yeah.
And what you can see the people, it seems, that are on their phones a lot more are harder to talk to or communicate with. Like and it's in general. It's not just farmers. It's it seems that there's something we're lacking to learn, and that's communicating with somebody that maybe you don't want to communicate, but you have to because of the work you're doing or whatever. And I think that's a big negative on our society. How can we get over that?
Yeah, I mean, I'm obviously biased because I come from a communications background in my business, communication. So I feel like I hear exactly what you're saying, and I agree that of all the things that we're getting better at, probably the thing that we're digressing as a society is how to properly communicate, have a conversation like you and I are having today, how to control our emotions when we're talking about some heavy stuff. Because agriculture, food, it's a very happy-go-lucky sector. It can also be a very heavy sector on certain days, right?
But it's such a needed thing in society. We, without the agriculture, we don't eat.
Yeah.
We'll be eating fish. And I have to eat more fish now, and I don't mind. But
Does that ever scare you? I mean, when you think, you said something pretty profound that, I mean, you need food in society. You hope we'll always be in business as a sector. But then I think of things like plant-based foods and other ways to eat. Yeah. Maybe one day, maybe we'll be making food from 3D printing synthetic food. We don't know.
Yeah.
Does it ever scare you or?
Well, it's been scaring me lately of the booming in housing.
Okay.
Close to us, there's been acres and acres of land packed full of houses.
Yeah.
And just lately in Kitchener, they're actually starting to build apartments.
Okay.
And people are getting upset with these high-rise apartments, you know, 40, 50 stories high. And I'm saying, all right.
Yeah.
And I had a big argument or discussion with a home builder. And I said to him, I said, you can't keep building out. You have to build up. Because we can't feed more people with less land. Mm. I mean, we've gone through that. Our technology and everything has got us to produce more food per acre.
Yeah.
But we can't double it now, I don't think.
We're at an efficiency point where we've probably hit a peak. Yeah, yeah.
And he's finally sat back and thought about it. He says, you know, maybe we got to build up. And I said, you're darn right, you got to. And there's some good examples of what they have, but they get so much fight back from the local people like, oh, I'm going to lose my view. Well, yeah, but at least you can still eat, you know,
Yeah. I mean, do you think part of that too, because I totally agree with what you're saying, and especially because you farm in an area here, again, from perspective for a Canadian audience listening to the podcast, you're farming in like prime land, some of the best in all of Canada.
That's right.
Literally an hour and a half down the road, down the 401 highway from downtown Toronto, where I believe it's 20% of Canada's population lives within the GTA. That's a huge amount of people in one area taking land from yourself and your family if that happens one day.
Yep.
the whole conversation around food and where we're going, I mean, does that excite you then, or make it nervous for saying here to my son, like, you know, yeah, one day if you have to sell our land for prime money, where does that put someone like your son one day?
This is quite the week for me, because last week I got offered a large amount of money for one of my farms to develop, and I've turned it down, and double what it's worth, just because I didn't like the attitude and the thought process that these people from Toronto
were coming.
They were coming in. They offered me a really good dollar, and it's just like, no, I can't take this land away. And it's scary, because the Toronto attitude is here in our area now. And if you move all kinds of houses, it's not just the attitude that comes, it's all the problems that come with it too.
Yeah.
So,
and it's hard when you have the same consumers that we're talking about building houses for are the same consumers that are eating our product, right?
Yeah, so
it's
like, that's right.
You know, we want to build trust with them. We want them to be friends of our agricultural food sector. And yet then we need to have an understanding of, well, the land that you're taking away.
And that attitude isn't in Toronto. You know, the appreciation people are the rural people right now, and, you know, in the small cities, but in Toronto for general, not always, not everybody, but that attitude is totally different. They expect it. They don't appreciate it.
Yeah. Yeah. And where do you think that comes from? I mean, is it lack of understanding? Is it being generations removed? I mean,
I think, lack of understanding, because they don't see it. Yeah, they're living in this cement world, and it's not part of their life. Or when you got to drive through the country to get to work. And I had a fellow this spring, he came to visit me, a friend of mine, and he says, you know, I've seen these combines in the field all the time. I didn't realize they're that big. And he finally got up and went, I couldn't get him out of this thing.
I bet. So of the acres that you grow, the 150 acres, what do you grow?
We're doing mostly wheat, soybeans, and corn, and then we do some hay for some horse farmers.
Yeah, okay. Which are very, around the GTA, is very much needed. So thanks for supporting our horse farmers.
Yep.
What would you then say, and I'm putting you on the spot a bit from a communication standpoint, but what would you say to that downtown Toronto consumer then, who knows nothing about what you produce, and then tie it to the food that they're eating? I guess, what would you say to them?
Yeah, like the food in the store comes from somewhere.
Yeah.
And it takes time to put it there. It goes through a 6 months of growing to produce this food, but they really got to get out and smell the roses, because don't take it for granted, because someday it may not, or on a bad year, it may not be there, or it could have to come from further away, which will bring the price up and the quality down.
Yeah.
So
it's a good point that a lot of consumers love supporting local. Oh, yes. We do love this movement of local food, knowing it's from Ontario or Canada, but yet we also then are a country that free trade, that we want to, of course, have fulsome trade markets for our cash croppers.
And all they have to do is make a phone call or an email, and they got the food coming from somewhere further south if needed. But it's great to have local stuff. And, you know, up in the Elmira area, the Mennonites have come up with a really great market up there where a lot of Mennonites are growing vegetables.
Yeah.
And they have a market up there that's directly from the farmer.
Yeah, direct to consumer.
And it goes to consumer and the food land and food basics. They're there buying it too.
Yeah, wow.
They're buying local stuff. And it took time to get that working. But boy, it's the best thing that their society has right now.
I mean, a lot of people don't even know when they travel down on the downtown to Toronto that they're passing by the food terminal. A lot of people don't even know that on the left-hand side. And even a lot of farmers haven't had made the time to stop in there and say, you know, that's where a lot of our maybe vegetables and fruit are going through there, right?
That's right.
I mean, and so you also have a different relationship then, because if you're growing, you know, the amount of taps you have with your maple syrup, I see growing, that's probably not the right word.
No, it is.
Grow maple syrup, but
you produce
maple syrup. Do you sell directly then to the consumer?
Quite a bit. Yeah. My son came up with this idea.
Okay. So obviously he has some good ideas.
Yeah. There's a lot of ideas. And one of them was when COVID hit, the supplier that we were selling our syrup to said, I can't take your syrup, because he sold it all for tourism places.
Oh, okay.
And he's a big buyer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we thought, what are we going to do? We had 40 barrels of syrup sitting there.
Yeah.
So Cody says, well, why don't I try selling in Marketplace on Facebook? And let's tag on free delivery. We can deliver the syrup, set it on the doorstep, e-transfers, the best thing that ever came out. It's a touchless transaction.
Yeah.
I thought, okay, let's give it a try.
Yeah.
Figuring out, you know, how much gas is this going to take and everything.
Yeah.
And we left the prices the same, and we started it, and it took off like wildfire.
It was
really good. And we sold probably a quarter of our syrup
that way.
Just that way.
Out of like necessity that turned out to be a way that now are you're still selling it that way.
Well, yes, we don't drop it. Like, and we haven't increased our prices. We get the same customers keep coming back. And all they do is send us an email, and pretty much weekly we deliver SERP. And at first I thought, oh, it's going to take so much. But when you tie together 10 deliveries, it's not very much at all. And it's with Google now, it's so great.
Yeah.
It maps out your route and everything. It's like technology again.
Yeah, amazing.
It's so great.
And so do you sell your maple syrup under the Snyder Acres brand? Okay, so it's tied to kind of your farm name and everything.
Yes.
Do you think part of that comes from the fact that they know where it's from and that they're buying it from you and your son, Cody?
We really push that it is local. And actually, since I'm also, we've got honey.
Yeah.
And maple syrup and honey go together.
Yeah.
And if somebody likes maple syrup, they also like honey.
Yeah, yeah. You get a sweet tooth.
We've been selling piles of honey, and that just increases the delivery load, which is just better. Like everything's working okay.
Yeah. I mean, you do have a unique perspective because you're not just cash cropping and selling wherever it goes. You don't necessarily know. But then you also have that direct to consumer relationship that you know firsthand how they're wanting things, maybe how they're thinking, how they're changing.
And what's everybody that started with small containers and now bigger containers.
Oh, I bet. Yeah.
And we told everybody after COVID's over, we're going to have an open house. Well, this spring we had an open house.
Yeah.
And it was really nice to meet the people now that we are selling SERP to. And they loved it. I mean, Cody explained everything. We were in operations, so the boiler was working while they were there, and they got samples of syrup at different stages.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Then they appreciate it too, and
it
worked out really well. We were booked full the whole time we opened. So next year we're kind of figuring on being bigger, like more openings, so that everybody can get more people through.
Good for you guys. I mean, what type of advice, Graham, would you give to a farmer who's maybe in a situation where they got the acreage, they're growing some cash crops, and they're trying to think of different ways to diversify their income? I mean, it sounds like you guys have thought of those things. So what advice would you give them? I mean,
The more you can deal directly with the public, the better. I think that is the future in farming, especially vegetables and products like that, like eggs too. Like the more you can deal directly, and society, they don't like driving around and picking up stuff. And the home delivery is actually probably the best thing that's ever happened to our operation.
It's just amazing. Worked out great. I mean, I say this too, I'm a dairy farmer's daughter, but also the amount of dairy that my children consume is wild.
Yeah.
And I always joke during the pandemic, I'm like, they should bring back the milkman.
Yeah.
Like if I could get my milk when I need it, just delivered to me weekly or biweekly or twice a week.
It's just that would spoil if it, like, see with ours, we can drop it off in the front door, and if they come back at night, it's still there, hopefully.
Yeah, for sure.
But it works. But, you know, if you're expecting something to come, sometimes the people, like, we've had kids just hanging out the window, can't wait to get out and pick that syrup up.
Also because they're thinking, you know, I'm meeting my farmer who made this maple syrup. So that relationship in itself is pretty, I mean, did you ever think all those years ago when you were, again, back to that 18-year-old kid who was getting out of the garage, did you ever think that you were going to be doing maple syrup with your son, dropping them off?
Never.
The amount of change that you went through is incredible.
Well, and then back then, too, we were putting syrup into tin cans. Where now it's glass and plastic. But I never thought we'd ever deliver. It was kind of a nuisance for people to come to the farm at that time to pick stuff up. It was like we'd go to the syrup festival and that was it. And that's how it worked. And too, when I was in school, I used to sell to all the school teachers and everything. Like, I was a real salesman at school.
But it sounds like that has worked, and that you're, like you said, you're not blockheaded, you were open to the idea. It also came in a necessity with the pandemic. Your son had an idea and you tried it and it looked like it worked.
It's gives us, we're proud of it.
Good for you guys. And so in terms of, like, just take us as we start wrapping up here, strategically, like, when do you guys sit down and think about where the future of Snyder Acres is going? Do you have an annual chat, or do you
we work together quite a bit, especially if you're working at fire, piling firewood or something. Like, Cody talks mile a minute, like, he never shuts up. So he's got lots of ideas, which tells you his brain is always working. But every day he comes up with something, some idea, or a way of changing an idea. Like, he never lets his brain rest.
It sounds like you're open, though, to, you know,
I listen
these
to
ideas.
It.
Yeah, you listen to it.
And I got to listen. I can't just cut him off at the beginning. I listen to the whole spiel, you know, because you spend time thinking about it. Why not? I mean, sometimes through his spiel, he can change my mind from my first impression.
So if you hadn't listened to him with the idea with your maple syrup and the delivery, right?
No, that we worked on for quite a while till we zoned in on it and got the idea going.
I mean, you bring up a really good piece of advice, though, about the listening. that, you know, our sector, we do love talking, which is a great,
yep.
It's nice to talk, but the other form of communicating is listening. And it sounds like you're open to that.
Well, don't just listen, go and think about it before you make a decision, you know, like, yeah. You got to weigh out all the pros and cons, and no idea is going to be perfect right off the start.
Yeah.
Is this an idea we can work with and work on?
Yeah,
let's go for it.
Where do you think Cody wants to take the farm in the next 10 years? I know we're not interviewing him, but and where do you want to take it in the next 10 years?
Well, I'd still like to continue what we're doing and just do it better. Like we've already talked about, we don't really want to expand. Let's work less harder and smarter.
Yeah.
And that is, you know, improve on our equipment and an equipment that's going to take less time to do things. So that's kind of where we're going, and where he might go in 20 years, I'm not sure. I just hope he may downsize or whatever. And I said, that's not a big deal. But I said, you got to make enough. Do enough work to make a good living.
So, yes, yeah, yeah.
Per year.
Yeah, so. And it sounds like he may be the same guy who's calling his dad like you did when you're driving the tractor when you're 89.
Yeah, I know.
Saying, does this still work, Dad? Yeah. What do you think?
He's actually said a couple times to his siblings that, you know, at first when I came home, I really didn't think Dad had all the ideas, but you know, the longer I work with him, the smarter he actually is.
Isn't that kind of like the full circle moment of life, though, when your child kind of realizes that age? That, my parents were more of a mentor than I realized.
Yep. No, and I think all kids go through that.
Yeah. I mean, guess what type of advice, last question, what type of advice would you leave to a father or mother who's going through a tough situation at home with children who got ideas on the farm, want to expand, want to do big things, and there's that conflict? Because that is, I think, something that's very natural for any farmer, right?
And the big thing is, neither side is right or wrong. You just take ideas and develop them, because no idea is right at the beginning. You got to work it, and from both angles. And but by all means, listen and say, okay, let's work on this. At least that shows the new idea maker that hey, this has a possibility. And even that person, the young person, will rethink it and try to do better, because. And the first one, whether it works or doesn't work as good, the next idea is going to even be better. Like, if you give them a chance in the first one, there's more to come, and it only gets better as they go on.
It sounds like you're very open to the failure, too, right?
Try
and if it doesn't work, try again. That's never know when the next best idea may be sitting there.
You learn from your mistakes.
I bet.
than you do from your profits.
As I say, an idea to take back to Cody for you guys to think of, only because I'm like, you know, you guys are working on direct-to-consumer with your maple syrup. I can't wait till I see the day that Snyder Acres is shipping maple syrup to BC or to PEI with, you know what I mean? Like
there is a lot of our syrup going out of province.
Yeah.
And we did come close to making a deal with England, because Cody was in England for 2 years and he got into this Waffle House.
Yeah.
And what it boiled down to is the shipping, and they had to have a shipping license and we had to have one to get it there, and it just brings the costs up too high that it finally hit that breaking point and we're very close to making the deal and then it fell apart. But advice I got from other people is, you'll go through a lot of proposals that don't make it when it comes to shipping products somewhere else.
I mean, that's a huge factor in what we do, in farming is the shipping, whether it's rail or transport down the road or, So it's going to be a way of something that we got to think about to address, right?
Yeah, but our syrup tasting, like, that's something over in England they don't get.
Like, I was going to say, what makes Canadian maple syrup revered, do you think?
It's the trees, and more importantly, it's not just maple trees, it's the ground and nutrients in the ground that produce the taste.
I feel like I have to ask him, Ron, your thoughts and perspective on climate change and how that's going to impact what you do and not just cash cropping, but maple syrup production.
It's
especially.
Scary. Is it scary? Yeah. Because, I don't know, our trees have to freeze in the winter, but we've had years where they hardly freeze and we still get a sap season, which is weird, but how far can it go? I don't know. Like, are we good for the next 5-10 years? I think so. But also, climate change produces disease and diseases we don't know of yet. And the gypsy moth came last year, died out last year, but it was scary. Like when you walked in the bush in the summertime, leaned up against a tree, you pulled your hand away, it was full of mush.
Wow.
That's how many caterpillars were hanging on the trees. And some bushes are worse than others. But it was scary. And it was like, you know, that or fire could really change our lifestyle in Ontario severely.
Yeah, I mean, even just this year with like how Western producers are dealing with drought conditions, and then here we're dealing with a very, very wet wet summer and fall. So it'll be interesting. I mean, I really appreciate the perspective. Greg, I feel like you and I could talk. Yeah. So like we could talk for a long time about a lot of different things. It sounds like you're very, I really appreciate, again, it's not age that allows for that curiosity and that growth mindset. It's just a person who's willing. And it sounds like you are that type of father figure for Cody. And I'm glad that you took your dad's advice all those years ago back when you were 18 to be farming. And I will absolutely be stopping by with my kids to hopefully grab some Snyder Acres maple syrup. So thanks so much for the conversation today.
Thank you.
Appreciate it. That's a wrap on this episode of the Country Guide podcast. Go to country-guide.ca for more great content to spark a conversation. And subscribe to the weekly newsletter to be notified when our next podcast episode is available.